I don't think dealers really understand or recognize how much of their value is tied up, how much of their assets are tied up in the real estate. And it's a single investment.
You're listening to Driving Performance, your go-to podcast for unmatched expertise in the world of buying and selling an automotive dealership. Each episode features discussions with industry leaders and is brought to you by Performance Brokerage Services, North America's premier family-owned automotive dealership brokerage firm with over 30 years of experience. We're here to ensure you gain the most reliable insights to confidently navigate a transaction and accomplish your unique goals. Whether you're looking to buy or sell, we prioritize building lasting relationships and maximizing the value beyond the transaction level. Here's your host, Jamie Farley, for another segment of Behind the Deal.
Welcome back to Driving Performance, the podcast where we sit down with dealers and industry experts to talk about what really goes into buying, selling, and building value in automotive dealerships. I'm Jamie Farley, and I'm excited to introduce my co-host for today's episode, Matt Willis, who's a fellow partner here at PBS. I'm excited for you to co-host today, Matt, and we are diving into the topic of real estate and how important this piece is to an overall buy-sell transaction.
Thanks, Jamie. I'm excited to be here. Yes, we talk to dealers every day about thinking about buying or selling a dealership and definitely about the role that real estate plays, which is significant in a buy-sell. So I'm excited about today's conversation.
Absolutely. And today, our special guest is Stephen Kay, Executive Director at Cushman & Wakefield. Stephen is one of the top experts in the country when it comes to valuing and advising on dealership real estate. Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Very glad to be here.
Yeah, so happy to have you on. I think let's start with your background. Stephen, can you tell us a little bit about your role at Cushman & Wakefield and how you came to specialize in dealership real estate?
Sure. Well, I've been at Cushman & Wakefield for about 32 years, started in 1993 as a junior appraiser, first junior appraiser at Cushman. Prior to that, they had only hired senior level appraisers. So over the years, I gained experience in a wide variety of real estate, but became particularly interested in auto dealerships. In 1997, we were having some issues with one of our major dealership lender clients. It was a pretty significant account, and they were having issues not just with us, but with other service providers regarding consistency in reporting, timeliness, and just overall service. And I was aware of this. I became aware of this, and I offered to take control of the account, and it went really well. We've been the primary appraisers for this client for the past 30 years, and we've expanded relationships not just throughout that organization, but with other captive lenders, regional lenders, national lenders, and dealers across the country over the years, to the point where today, we have a team of about 50 appraisers around the country who specialize in dealership appraisals. They don't all do it full time, of course. Wish it was that type of demand. But, you know, it is important that we do have specialists in the different regions such that when dealership appraisal opportunities come in, we funnel them to the same people consistently so they have that familiarity with the product type and the uniqueness of it. So that's how it started, and that's how I got to where I'm at today. Today, I do manage the practice as a specialty leader, and I've been doing that for about 15 years now, hopefully a number of years into the future.
Steve, when do you think a dealer should start thinking about their real estate and leading up to a sale? What's too early in the process? And then what are some questions that they should be asking themselves throughout the process?
Yeah, sure. I think what's really most important is that they have an understanding of what their objectives are. Do they want to try to pull out all of their assets, or do they want to maybe hold on to the real estate, lease it to the dealer so that they can have consistent income? And as for how early in the process, that should be front and center. They should really understand, again, what their objectives are and what the value of their real estate is, because ultimately, that real estate value will influence the business value.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to kind of digging into what some of those options could be. Before we get into that, I was just kind of curious, like, what do you see as some of the biggest misconceptions dealers have about the value of their property? And then also building upon that, like, how does it fit into a buy-sell transaction?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'd say the biggest misperception is that the real estate should be considered separate from the dealership, because you really can't get at a true value for the business unless you know how much of the cash flow generated by that business has to go to support the real estate. And if you try to negotiate it separately, that can cause problems down the road. You may have a situation where you agree on the business value, and then you go to negotiate the real estate value, and you can't come to an agreement. And the buyer will be hesitant to come off of what he's willing to pay because he knows what he's expecting. He knows what he plugged into his cash flow for rent. And if you start playing with the purchase price, that can affect the viability of the investment. And it can become a source of contention. It can slow up closing a deal. And at the end of the day, it's in everyone's best interest to just get the deal done. The dealer, you know, once you make a decision, and it can be a difficult decision, but once you make that decision to actually sell, you want this to go through smoothly and in a timely manner. And the best way to do that is to stay ahead of what's going to really be needed in terms of information for that efficient closing. And one of those critical components is, of course, the dealership real estate.
So should they be negotiating that first before the business or just simultaneously? What's your advice on that?
I would advise that they actually get that figured out first, because it's pretty easy to, once you have the real estate value, it's pretty easy to get what the dealer would reasonably plug in as a market rent for that dealership when they are structuring their pro forma. And of course, you know, it's going to impact the cash flow. And it's that cash flow that the dealer will be making an offer on in terms of the business value.
Steve, when talking about valuation, you know, everybody's trying to get the top value. How important is like zoning, location, and then probably the biggest one dealers want to hear is facility requirements, like image facility versus non-imaged facility. How much does that play a part in the valuation?
Yeah, each of those are really important factors. Zoning, not as much, unless you're in an area where there's a transition in use. And you do see that in certain markets, particularly maybe down in Florida, Southern Florida, or, you know, out in California, where property values are just really high and there's a tendency to convert commercial properties to, say, mixed use, multi-level developments. And in those situations, you could have the underlying land worth more than what that property would be worth as a dealership. Then, you know, regarding location is, of course, important in anything related to real estate. Regarding auto dealerships, you know, you still want to be in a dealer row, typically. You want there to be good accessibility, good visibility, and among other dealerships offering similar products. There's still that synergy that exists out there, and there is a demand for that. Aside from that, you're aware, you know, there's much more demand for dealerships in primary markets than secondary markets. And there's a lot more demand for dealerships in secondary markets than tertiary or rural markets. So these are all factors to consider, you know, when trying to understand what influences value.
So with an image compliant store in downtown Chicago versus an image store in rural Illinois, or a non-image store for that matter, can you talk a little bit about that? We see a lot of non-image stores for sale today.
So those are a problem because it's often unknown, you know, what is going to need to be done, what the manufacturer is going to require of the new owner. In some rural markets where you have a smaller volume dealership, lower throughput, the manufacturer is less likely to make significant demands on the dealer. However, in markets where manufacturers see the potential for growth and the cash flow of the operation can reasonably support it, the dealer will be required to make, at times, very substantial improvements in their properties. That trend started coming out of the Great Recession, and it really hasn't let up. all manufacturers, you know, have their design elements that the dealership must conform to. And if that dealership does not conform, there could be very substantial expenses associated with that. And now the next question is probably, well, how does that impact value? So it really depends on how old the dealership is. If it hasn't really received an upgrade in 25, 30 years, that dealership's probably mostly depreciated already. So any dollar you put into it, you're probably going to get a dollar for dollar return. However, for newer dealerships, I'll throw out like Honda, for example. So Honda's had the Blue Wave in the front of their dealerships going back years, and they're moving away from that. They've got a new design elements they want incorporated into their future dealerships. In those circumstances, the dealerships may not be all that old and they may still be in very good condition, but the manufacturer may still require that the facade be changed at the least and some interior remodeling be done. And in those cases, you're not going to see a full dollar for dollar return, because the existing improvements are not at the end of their useful economic level.
Steve, I would love to get your thoughts on, in a buy-sell scenario, those sellers that decide that maybe they want to keep their real estate and then lease it to the buyer. And I don't know if they're just looking at it from a source of income, you know, that they're going to get every month. But I wanted to get your thoughts on that and maybe about kind of the risks associated with that and about becoming a landlord to the next owner and maybe some things they're not thinking about at the time when they're making that decision.
Yeah, so that's really important. It can seem attractive to hold on to the real estate because it can provide that steady income, because there is so much value to the business above and beyond the real estate. It'd be very uncommon for a dealer to go bankrupt or vacate the property prior to the end of the lease term. So there's not as much vacancy and collection risk. However, there is some risk down the road. First of all, you would never want to structure a lease like that on a short-term basis. So if you want to hold on to the real estate, you really want to hold on to it for a minimum of 10 years. So that's considered at least, that's the minimum in terms of how we would define a long-term lease. And the reason you don't want to have it any shorter is you just don't want, you want some certainty in your cash flow, and you don't want to give the tenant an out any earlier than you have to. You'd be leasing the property out for some stability and cash flow. So you'd want that to go on for at least 10 years. Secondly, if you're interested in refinancing, banks will sometimes make it difficult to refinance a property that you don't have control over for the long term. So I would definitely think about that lease term, 10 years at a minimum. You'd want there to be options in that lease, and preferably lease it options that are straightforward, where the renewal lease terms are set. Typically, that's tied to the consumer price index, but it can be set bumps, or whatever that may be, but you'd want that incorporated into the lease. Something else you'd want to consider is who's going to be responsible for the maintenance and upkeep. Sometimes these leases are structured such that the tenant is responsible for everything on the property. That's triple net, including the payment of all taxes, insurance, and such. Less common, you may have the landlord responsible for certain elements of the real estate, such as structural issues. But again, you just want to clarify that in the lease and, you know, make sure, you know, that you're covering any potential downside risk.
Even from kind of like the OEM perspective, and let's say that facility upgrade was needed, I've seen the case where tenants are like, well, I'm not going to invest or reinvest into the image program or build if I'm the tenant and I don't own the real estate. So I feel like I've come across that in the past.
Yeah. Okay. So that's interesting, because from the tenant's perspective, you want to make sure that you have control of the property longer term, such that if you need to make improvements to the property, it makes economic sense. If your lease term is up in the short term, you're just not going to make those improvements. From the landlord's perspective, there is some risk. As you approach the end of the lease term, the tenant gains leverage. They gain significant leverage because particularly if you're at a point in time when you need to re-image the property, they will be considering whether to stay put at the current location or whether to move on to a different location. And that gives them considerable leverage because they can go back to you as a landlord and say, hey, I need you to cut me this deal or we're just going to leave. And that puts a landlord in a really tough position, particularly for automobile dealerships, because unlike other types of real estate, be it industrial, office, residential, where there's a number of other potential users for the property in the event there's a vacancy, that's not the same thing for automobile dealerships. So if an auto dealership goes vacant, you're typically looking at pennies on the dollar in terms of value. So that would be the risk of holding onto the property as the landlord. Aside from re-imaging, there is also the risk that over time, the face of retailing may change in the industry. There are manufacturers out there such as Rivian and Tesla that are trying to market directly to consumers. And there is some interest on the part of, you know, legacy manufacturers to try to do the same. While there are certainly legal obstacles for that, you just don't know what the retailing environment is going to look like or what the dealership of the future is going to look like. So again, the maximum value for your dealership is pretty much at the time you sell it. So that is something you'd really want to, it's at the time you sell the business.
Yeah, no, those are really great points. And I think I'm so glad you outlined them because I think that's really valuable to understand.
Well, Steve, this is a hot topic in our business of trying to keep the progress going on a deal and not slowing it down. Are there any common environmental, title, or site issues that could slow down or derail a transaction?
Yeah, well, certainly, you know, there's environmental issues. I mean, typically a dealer will have some idea of what's going on their own property. And if there's any concern that there may have been some leaks of hazardous materials, oil, gasoline, whatever it may be, you want to have investigations done sooner rather than later, because that is certainly something that can slow up a transaction. As well, you might want to have an idea what's going on in the vicinity of the dealership, which a typical phase one will address, like adjacent uses. It'll identify those and identify any, you know, potential risks there. So I would say a phase one environmental assessment is not a bad idea going into this, just as I'd recommend an appraisal. The more information you have going into the negotiation, the better for all involved.
What can a seller do today to avoid problems down the road?
I think, again, it boils down to information. Selling an auto dealership is an emotional process. You know, as with anything, anything's of value that have an emotional component, you know, the seller's perspective of value may differ from market's perspective of value. So The benefit of bringing professionals in at the front end, whether it's the broker and the business value or the appraiser for the real estate value, is to level set expectations, because the objective, if the decision has been made to sell, that the objective is to conclude the sale in as time efficient manner as possible for all involved.
What's one topic you find yourself explaining over and over again to dealers that you just wish more people understood?
Oh, absolutely. That's not, appraisers don't determine value. And I think that's a misperception. It's like, oh, come on, you can just give us more value. We're just a couple million dollars from where we need to be. That's not our role. Our role as appraisers is simply to reflect the market. And a good appraiser will have a good understanding of the sales that have occurred out there, what's behind those sales, will have appropriately investigated those sales, made reasonable adjustments to those sales when comparing them to the subject property, and concluding to a reasonably supported value. And again, this just gets to making it easier to close a transaction. Because when you bring other non-market factors into the equation, it can really go up the wheels. Just yesterday, I was on the phone with a broker managing the sale of the business and the real estate. And to my earlier point, what they had done was they went down the path of, you know, negotiating the purchase of the business, and they just need to settle on the real estate. And the real estate value came in lower than what the seller really thought it was worth. And we completely understood that the property that was being sold was a non-image compliant property that was going to need loads of work and investment. And the data that we selected reflected other dealerships in similar condition. And the broker in this case was concerned, well, why did you go regional for your data when you have three comps in the local market that are also auto dealerships? And that's where he would leave it. He's like, they're auto dealerships, so they are comparable to mine. But the dealerships that had sold in the local market were vastly superior in terms of age, quality, condition, branding, everything. So even though they're dealerships, we did not view them as really comparable. So that has become a significant hangup, and it can cause a problem with this transaction. Again, all the more reason why it's better to get that real estate component out of the way, because if the real estate is valued lower than where the seller thinks it should be, that can be made up in the business value. So either way, you're capturing value. It's a matter of how it's allocated. And knowing how much it costs to upgrade dealerships today, it really is, it's important to account for that when selling a non-image compliant dealership.
Let's talk about sale leasebacks. They've become very common of late. And can you explain why they appeal to some buyers and then why maybe it's a bad idea?
Sale leasebacks are more attractive today than they have been in years, simply because interest rates have increased so much. Up until recently, it was so cheap to just fund the acquisition of dealerships through traditional banks. Sale leasebacks really were not competitive from a financial modeling standpoint. Nowadays, interest rates are considerably higher than where they have been in the past. At the same time, capitalization rates on real estate, while they have gone up, they haven't gone up to the same degree. So it's now more advantageous than it's been in years to go down that route. The attraction of a sale leaseback for the seller, for the dealer occupier, is that it frees up capital. So if they're interested in growing their operation, which is really important these days to realize the economies of scale necessary to succeed, if the objective is to continue to acquire, you need access to capital. And this is just another way to get that. It can often be easier to work through a sale leaseback transaction than to work with a bank. There are some downsides. It can be a little bit more challenging to get buy-off from the manufacturer. So that's something they're going to want to know more about the operator and such. So there's some challenges there. And then for some buyers, it may not be as attractive an option because they really want to control the property. They want to be able to, they know what they can do with it. They may envision adding this or that, and they don't want to have to necessarily go back to the landlord for permission to make improvements to a property. But I would say that the other benefit of a sale lease bank is diversification. I don't think dealers really understand or recognize how much of their value is tied up, how much of their assets are tied up in the real estate. And it's a single investment. And particularly where the automotive market is going and the disruption that is occurring or is set to occur over the next decade, I think diversification is something that is a valuable consideration. And that would be one of the appeals of, a sale leaseback, is that you can run your business and not have as much a concern that you have too much tied up in one investment.
Yeah, thanks for sharing your perspective on that. I feel like what we have experienced from time to time, if we're representing a transaction and the real estate is tied up in a really long-term lease, that in some cases is not attractive to the buyers who are taking a look at the opportunity, just because they don't want to assume that lease. So that's one of the things I've seen as you know, maybe a downside of a dealer taking that route. Maybe it's a great solution for them at the time, but then it might make it a little bit harder for them to sell the store down the road if they change their plans and maybe want to divest.
Yeah, that is certainly a consideration, which is why it's helpful to have, if you're going to do that, you want to have option terms that perhaps, well, you're talking about an issue with the dealers, the hesitancy on the part of the tenants or the...
I'm talking about if a buyer takes the option of doing the sale lease back with a third party company. So the third party company buys the real estate, they end up in a very long-term lease with them. And then that owner, that new owner, decides they want to sell in 5 years, the dealership. Now their real estate is tied up in this very long-term lease with the third party company. And that ends up, from what we're seeing, being a component that's less attractive to other potential buyers that may be looking at the opportunity because that dealer decided that they wanted to sell.
Oh, that's interesting. That would certainly be a consideration then for the seller. Yeah, I can't say that we see too many sale leasebacks from the appraisal perspective. Those types of transactions don't typically need an appraisal, so we don't get involved in that. And from a broker's standpoint, your perspective that you just shared is one I hadn't heard. So thank you for sharing that.
Of course.
Well, it's important to know, in part because when we are asked to appraise a lease fee interest, again, it's not often, but we are at times. One of the things that goes into evaluating an appropriate capitalization rate is risk. I mean, it's pretty much everything that goes into a capitalization rate is tied to risk. And if what you are saying is that it could be more challenging to sell the dealership because there is this tie to the real estate and the lease, these are things we should be considering when establishing a cap rate.
Steve, have you seen a situation where a dealer's overbuilt or overinvested in their facility?
Overbuilt, boy, that's in the eye of the beholder. From a real estate appraiser's perspective, it's very challenging for us to make that sort of determination. We do not see the business cash flow. So most dealerships today are constructed with a size of 25 to 30,000 square feet. That's a sweet spot. But we'll go out there and we'll appraise dealerships that have, you know, 60, 70, 80,000 square feet. And they will say, wow, this is really large for this market. We'd have to acknowledge that. But if we're walking through the dealership and we see that all the components are just humming along, everything's occupied, everything's being used, then we are not going to adjust the value of that downward. We will assume that the business is sufficiently profitable to support the improvements in their present form. If someone provides us with evidence to the contrary, or you as brokers have evidence to the contrary, that is something that you're going to want to consider when pricing your dealership. And so, like I said, as long as we see that the components are reasonably being used, we will give them their full depreciated value to the extent that they're supported by the wider market sales. There are times, however, when we see components that just would not make sense to most buyers. We have appraised auto dealerships with helipads. I shouldn't say dealerships. I think one in the 30 plus years I've been doing this, I saw that once. There was a helipad and an appraiser called me and he wanted, what else we value that? I said, you're not going to value. You can note it. You're not going to give it any value. No one's going to pay. Another interesting example would be, they got a call from a dealer out in the field. She's like, Steve, I'm not exactly sure how I should be viewing this dealership that has a bachelor pad above the showroom. And I said, what do you mean? He says, oh, no, this is like a regular deluxe, you know, apartment. And it's just, I haven't seen this before. Can you help me with the value? And I said, well, you know, the highest and best use of this property continues to be a dealership, right? She said, yeah, absolutely. I said, well, that is not a component you will typically see in an auto dealership. So I said, give consideration to the potential for conversion to storage. Maybe they could do part storage, or they can have internet sales, or they can convert it to some type of use. But I said, at best, you're given that shell of it. So those would be examples of some functional obsolescence that we see once in a while that we would have to account for appraisal.
How are current interest rates and market conditions shaping your advice to dealers in 2025?
There's so much that dealers have to deal with these days. It's just incredible. I mean, no one knows where interest rates are going. No one knows where tariffs are going. No one knows where the consumer is going. In all the years I had been doing this, I don't see clarity. And I challenge anyone to tell me that there's clarity out there. I mean, thankfully, dealerships continue to be profitable, quite profitable, even though they're not at the levels they were a couple of years ago. They're still at pre-COVID levels, and dealers are generally a happy group of people. Moving forward, there's a lot of unknowns. And I guess I would say, I don't know that I would delay a decision to sell based on any forecast for an uptick in the demand for dealerships or automotive products. At the same time, I wouldn't tell someone just to sell because of what's going on out there in the market. It remains a deeply personal decision, but the impact of all of these factors, be it interest rates or tariffs, there's just too many unknowns.
Steve, I'm no tax expert by any means, but speak on 1031s. I hear that a lot in several transactions. And are you seeing more dealers explore 1031 exchanges or creative ways to convert?
So we don't see that. That's something you as the brokers are going to see more of or see interest in at the time of the sale, because all that does is allow you to defer any sort of capital gain there may be on that real estate when you go, you know, when you sell it. So for dealers who are interested in deferring that obligation, that tax obligation, a 1031 exchange is an option, but there are pretty strict requirements in how you go about that. The funds obtained from the sale have to be rolled over into a like-kind asset, so real estate to real estate investment, you know, within a relatively short time period, or simply won't qualify for that tax benefit. But if you are looking to sell the dealership, that is something you'd want to consider.
Okay, so wrapping up here, Steve, just one last question on my mind. What would be one thing dealers should start doing today to better position their real estate, whether they're looking to sell in 1 year or maybe not for 10 years? What advice would you have?
Dealers, thankfully, do a really good job of maintaining their real estate. So, you know, in terms of maintenance and upkeep, continue doing what you've always been doing. One thing to also explore is what opportunities might there be to eck out more value out of real estate? Are you in an area where there's some changing land use patterns and there may be an opportunity to convert the dealership? There may be extra value in that land. And if you're curious about, you know, that is something that appraisers can certainly help you out with. So from a real estate standpoint, you're always going to want to know, how does the real estate in its present form align with manufacturer expectations? Because to the extent that they don't align, there will be the expectation on the part of the buyer to put that property into alignment. And there will be a cost associated with that. And the better handle you have as a seller on what those costs may be, what those expectations may be, the easier it will be to sell the property. Again, it boils down to having as much information as possible at the front end, such that these things don't become hangups.
Great advice. If any of our listeners or dealers out there want to reach out to you for your expertise, or maybe they're seeking an appraisal, how would they get in touch with you?
Sure. You can email me at any time. It's stephen.k@cushwag.com. Stephen's with a PH, so stephen.kay@cushwag.com, or you can call me at any time at 312-470-1813.
Excellent. Stephen, you've been a blast to have on. Thank you so much for all of this great information and content. Really appreciate you.
No, I appreciate being here. Thank you much.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Driving Performance. The show notes include links to any resources mentioned in today's show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you never miss an episode and leave us a 5-star review. If you're considering buying or selling an automotive dealership, reach out to us at performancebrokerageservices.com. or send an email to info@performancebrokerageservices.com.